Aw.
Is that one familiar to you?
A little bit. I don't think I would recognize it in the wild. But
Yeah,
it's
that is the call of a scarlet tanager.
Now, is this one of those birds that has a color in its name but is not actually the color it's
This one is
called?
not a trickster. No,
Okay.
this one is bright, fiery red with black wings. They're members of the cardinal family, and like our familiar northern cardinal, they are bright red, almost brighter red,
Okay.
but small songbird looking.
And not fully red like a cardinal?
Oh, fully red,
Fully red.
except for very dark black wings, which are like provide this really beautiful like contrast. I would say a cardinal is red. A scarlet tanager is red in all caps.
Okay. Wow. All right.
They overwinter in South America in the jungle. And so there we have these like beautiful little tropical birds that come all the way up here to breed and eat insects and head on back to South America over the winter. But right now is really the time to see them because they dwell like very high up in the canopy. And so they're very hard to see for most of the summer when it's all leafed out. But in mid-spring is a good time to spot them before the canopy extends. After that, you really need to listen to that, what I call a chick purr, chick purr, chick purr call to know they're around, and then sometimes you get a glimpse of them.
You know, it now it makes a little sense to me. This is the Season Watch Pod. I'm Heidi
All
Holton,
right.
and that's Charlie Mitchell. We're right in. We're going in hot, right, on the birds here. But the sound, I'm going to see if I can play the cardinal sound. It sounds a little like the cardinal to me.
Okay.
Okay. We'll go back to the tanager, see if you can. Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe I was thinking of
They're
the.
both repeated.
Yeah.
I think of the cardinal as sounding kind of like a car alarm. Chick purr would be kind of a chill car alarm,
Okay.
but definitely kind of those repeated notes.
You know what? I was getting it mixed up because I was thinking cardinal was the wachoo, wachoo. Which bird is that?
Oh, also a cardinal.
Oh, okay.
So cardinals have a variety of calls. I think they all kind of sound like car alarms. But yes, the cardinal is a whichu, whichu, whoop,
Okay.
whoop, 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 whoop.
Yeah, that is nice job. That was the what I thought I was going to hear when I hit the sound of the northern cardinal there, and that to me sounded sort of similar. But it makes sense. They're in the family, right?
Cardinal family.
Is there a lot of different cardinals? I'm sorry, I'm throwing things at you.
I don't think so. Let me see here. See. What I'm doing is I'm going to iNaturalist. I'm searching the cardinal family, Cardinalis. And then I'm just gonna search for. Okay, so typical cardinals. Or do I want cardinals and allies? I'm gonna go cardinals and allies.
Allies, nice.
Observations in Minnesota. Okay, this is a very wide
Okay.
category apparently, because we've got the
Oh.
northern cardinal, the grosbeak, the indigo bunting, the scarlet tanager. So I'm going to go a little bit more narrow and say typical cardinals. And that's just the northern cardinal. Okay, so if we're counting the scarlet tanager as a cardinal, then also the indigo bunting and the rose-breasted grosbeak.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. These are the kind of birds we're seeing. I have not seen a tanager, but there's apparently been one out at our place, and I have not seen a cardinal yet this year. So, oh well.
Okay, yeah, I've seen cardinals hang out at our place throughout the winter, but I've heard the tanager, but I haven't seen one yet. Ooh, there's so many beautiful tanagers that come here, just less frequently. There's a summer tanager, which is doesn't have the black wings, but is also very red, more like cardinal red, lowercase red.
Okay.
A western tanager, which has a like yellow body, kind of like a goldfinch, but then an orangey head, and then the painted bunting. Which is red and green and blue and gorgeous. But only 11 observations of the painted bunting on iNaturalist, where like the northern cardinal has almost 5,000. So not as common.
You know, a couple weeks ago, you can find now on our website the conversation with Pam Perry, and she was talking once again about how useful this Merlin app is. And if you somehow have not downloaded this free app yet, this is a perfect time to do it. You're going to love it. And it also was reminding us all the things she was seeing. We were talking about pelicans. We heard some of that last week. You can hear the full conversation at kexc.org. But it also reminds me that there's a lot of places in northern Minnesota that have bird walks going on. And I found some links to put in there. We had our very own John Latimer doing a warbler walk here at the Forest History Center last week. Pam has been a part of those Northern Arb bird walks on Wednesdays and Saturdays. Forest History Center continues the warbler walks through the month on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And of course, Zach Zimbog, always some sort of bird walks and things there.
Every Saturday, I think, they have a songbird walk through the spring.
Yeah. And then I found a really cool thing. It's a bird list for the state parks of Minnesota.
Oh, great. Yeah.
By park. So if that's something you're going to do this summer, which is always a fine thing to do, you can like prep yourself and go check it out. You can also just bring the Merlin app and then check if it's correct, if it lines up, and, you know, fun things to do.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing like, you know, going for one of those hikes with someone who knows what they're talking about. Mm. You just see so much more. You learn so quickly that way. There's no replacement for an actual expert. Merlin will do a fine job if you don't have the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But
you know, that's what John Latimer this week was walking with folks. Our coworker Malachi had moved, and so he was out with Malachi to explore and walking there, and then some other folks who had pledged to get a walk with John. And this is something he does. If you know John, or probably if you ask, don't everybody clamor to do this right now. He's also very busy, but he's done with this with so many people over the years. He's done it at our place too, where he just takes you on a little walk around your house to what you should pay attention to. You know, a knowledgeable person, yes, but also a John Latimer type is a good
yes, someone, absolutely.
Someone who just is on fire about everything out there.
Such a good educator, John.
Oh, yeah. That's what we do here, of course. It's a podcast for the curious, and we're delighting in nature each and every week. And we are spurred on by John, but certainly spurred on by students as well. Who did you pick out this week to listen to?
So this week I picked out the North Shore Community School kids. I mean, first of all, I think their classroom setup is great. They clearly get outside all the time, but the entire school seems to offer observations, and I particularly like their observations from this week because new vocabulary word.
Here we go.
My name is Ilya, and I'm your phonologist for this week. Tuesday, May 12th, there were scattered thunder showers and hail early in the morning. There were reports of half dollar size hail, 1 inch, quarter inch, but mostly pea-sized hail in the French River and Knife River area. On Monday, May 11th, Miss Urban saw a blooming bloodroot, the first of the season. On Tuesday, May 12th, the preschoolers noticed wild ginger plants popping up on the school forest by the stream. They also noticed wild leeks, or ramps, had popped up in a lot of spots. Miss Jackson spotted her first hummingbird and rose-breasted grosbeak on Saturday. May 9th. On Monday, May 11th, Miss Urban heard the first black and white warbler singing in the school forest. On Tuesday, May 12th, Miss Urban heard an ovenbird, the first of the year. Miss Rolfe's neighbor saw small birds swimming in their pond and found them to be Wilson's phalaropes. These are not very common in our area. They are typically found in the prairie pothole region. On Thursday, May 14th, Miss Urban heard a black-throated green warbler singing a first of the year. On the afternoon of Sunday, May 10th, Miss Jackson spotted a porcupine up in a tree at her house. The next afternoon, she saw that it had a baby. Did you know a baby porcupine is called a porcupet, and a group of porcupines are called a prickle? Nora saw a bat on Sunday, May 10th, on the ground next to her garage. It had an injured wing. I saw a black bear on Friday, May 15th, peeking out of the trees, sniffing for food, next to Highway 61. On Monday, May 11th, Miss Felton's class caught a dragonfly nymph in the stream. On Thursday, May 14th, Mr. Dover's class caught a leech in the stream. This concludes the phonology report. Have a great week and be observant.
Nobody has to tell her to be observant. I love that she saw the bear, but was not scared by the bear.
Right? Just peeking its head out. The joys of growing up with wildlife around you and, like, learning which ones to be cautious of, which ones just to be overjoyed seeing. Like that porcupine that then the next day had a little baby.
Porcupet.
Which is called a...
Porcupet.
Porcupet.
That's crazy and cute. Did you know this one?
So this one, I learned the word porcupet when I was in college from my teacher, Dr. Friedberg. But in this class I was taking, we got part of the class materials was we got a bunch of Stan Tequila's field guides, Mammals of Minnesota, was one of them. And in Stan's notes for the North American porcupine, he says, babies have an atypical birth, emerging head first with eyes open, teeth erupted, and covered with quills. Quills are soft and dry and become stiff within a couple hours.
Wow.
And that just really captured me. This idea of giving birth to a porcupine?
Yeah.
Yikes. But it makes so much sense that, like, most mammals are born not head first. Humans are an exception because we've got this big old head. But then that porcupines would evolve to be born head first makes a lot of sense. You want to pet a porcupine, you know, with the grain of the fur and not against, otherwise you get stuck. And then that they already have quills. It's crazy. And that they're, like, hardened up and ready to stick within a few hours. Incredible.
Does this mean that you have petted a porcupine?
Hold on, I'm considering statute of limitations. Yes, it was in Canada, so I think I'm safe.
Okay. What, is it illegal to pet a porcupine?
Well, messing with wildlife in general is not, you know.
Yeah.
Recommended?
Right. I'm not saying go out and do it, but it sounds to me like you're going to go to porcupine jail if it wasn't in Canada.
Well,
okay.
You know, I'm not sure, but I'm going to err on the side of caution.
Sure. That's really smart. Everyone else should too. But what happened in Canada?
So what happened in Canada was my wife and I were sitting on the dock. I was, like, out on a paddleboard, just kind of, like, floating, looking for turtles. And we saw this kind of blob swimming along. And I wanted to know what it was. So, of course, I paddled on over to it on my paddleboard. I was, like, hoping it would be, like, I don't know, a woodchuck or something. It was a porcupine. And the porcupine immediately decided to climb onto my paddleboard.
Oh,
so I climbed off my paddleboard.
Wow.
Oh, it was so cool. And it was, like, kind of a smallish porcupine. I think it was a young one. But they are great swimmers because their quills are hollow. So they're like a little life jacket paddling along. And so eventually the porcupine climbed back off my paddleboard and went into the forest. I called for my wife to go get my leather gloves because who wouldn't want to then hold the porcupine?
Not recommended.
Yep. And so the porcupine and I crashed off through the woods. I was barefoot. The porcupine was also barefoot, but more used to it. And eventually the porcupine just kind of stuck its head kind of under a rotten log and just had all of its quills pointed out at me.
Mm-hmm.
There is a myth that porcupines can, like, shoot their quills. This is untrue. It's just they can, like, try to slap you with their tail and quill you.
They can be kind
but,
of
yeah,
a,
with
a musical instrument of sorts, can't they? It kind of makes noise, the quills.
The quills, yeah, they do kind of, like, rattle around. Mm-hmm. The porcupine itself made such cute noises. You can YouTube videos of porcupines eating pumpkins, and it's just adorable. Anyways.
So it has its head in a... It's hidden its head, but then that's when you pet it?
So then my wife brought me my gloves, and with the aid of these, you know, cheap leather gloves that you get from Menards or whatever, I was able to pick up the little porcupine and hold it, and it was so cute. And there is a picture of me.
Oh, yeah. I've seen this, haven't I?
Yes. Porcupine in hand. Well, in hands. And I am the happiest I have ever been in any picture, including my wedding. Like, just thrilled to be holding this little porcupine. The porcupine was released safely, far away from our trees, which the porcupines keep trying to murder. All went ended well. Great experience.
I was so surprised that prickles was actually a thing. I thought that that was just the name of the resident porcupine at Long Lake Conservation Center, Dill Prickles.
Dill Prickles!
But there was a bigger, there's a bigger meaning to that.
Yeah, so a group of porcupines is called a prickle. Great name for it. One of the things I really like about porcupines and skunks and some of the other animals that just have, like, really overwhelming defensive systems is that they're just chill little guys. You know, if you get too close, they'll spray you or stick up all their spines or whatever. But otherwise, you just kind of, like, plod along and go about their life.
So they don't shoot these quills at you. And I have been on our trails and heard a porcupine. I was like, what is that noise? You know, and then looked down and saw him scurrying and could see. I mean, I wasn't, there's not a chance that I was going to go after it, leather gloves or not, but it didn't completely freak me out. It was just sort of like, oh, okay, this is what's going on. But we have all seen pictures of dogs with quills.
Oh, so yes, have we ever.
So the porcupine is not shooting those into the dog. The dog is getting in there.
The dog is biting the porcupine.
Oh, dog.
Or getting too close to the porcupine.
Yeah.
In the case of my childhood dog, I loved her so much. She had such a predatory instinct, just made me so sad. In one case, she did find and manage to kill a porcupine. My brother and I were up in Canada as teenagers. My parents weren't there yet, and we had to bring her to a vet, and they found, I think, over 300 quills in her mouth, some through her tongue. It was very unfortunate. She regretted the incident.
Oh my gosh.
And so did I, little porcupine.
Well, let us know if you have any porcupine stories. I bet it's happened to you with your dog or maybe been able to see one too. So we'd love to hear from you. Leave that SpeakPipe voice message for us and we can play it next week. It'd be a lot of fun.
Poops look like little sausage links made of sawdust.
What?
So you know like sausage links, how they are like kind of round, but then like a little twist and then another one, a little twist.
Yeah.
So...
Oh, like a whole
porcupine
string of sausages?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kinda.
Okay.
Porcupine poops look like that, except like entirely made of sawdust because they're always eating bark. Okay. You look very skeptical about this.
I just didn't realize this is where we were going. And then the sawdust thing didn't make sense. But then you're like, of course it makes sense. If that's what they're eating, it would become sawdust.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Interesting things for the curious, of course. Well, in the beginning, we heard the song of the Scarlet Tanager, not Tanager, is the way I had
been. Or Scarlet Teenager, which I like to call them.
And John Latimer.
Hark, a teenager.
John Latimer had it in his phonology report.
And if that weren't enough, my good friend Sam Miletich sent me a note saying that he'd seen a Scarlet Tanager on Saturday. So apparently, the Scarlet Tanagers are back. And because there aren't a lot of leaves on the trees, they are relatively easy to see. Where do you go to find scarlet tanagers? Uninterrupted forests. They like a forest canopy that is not all patchwork with yards, so you're not going to see them very often in a town. You need 40 acres of wooded area around that they can be comfortable in. They like deciduous trees. They nest way up at the tops of the deciduous trees. And outside of their song, they're not very often seen. You hear them more often than you will see them. And it continues to amaze me that you can have a bird that is bright red and it can be sitting in an all-green tree, and they are just about impossible to find. And they are really, really amazing birds in that sense.
So John didn't see one himself.
John is the nexus to which all phonology reports arrive.
Of course.
As it should be.
Yep. Charlie, have we ever talked about, are you somebody that goes after, is looking for mushrooms in the woods?
So I love finding mushrooms. I have an unfortunate dislike of their taste.
Okay.
If I was someone who liked the taste of mushrooms, I would be out there all the time.
Wow.
Wow. Tracking down mushrooms. But something about the texture, I just can't. I can't. But I love finding them. I love finding all the, like, weird different species. I got into slime molds recently, which aren't mushrooms or fungi, but are a weird other thing. I love finding those ones.
But I've been hearing from friends who are trying to find mushrooms right now because they think because of how dry it is, they're not finding them as much. But then again, then you see other people with, you know, it's much like anglers out there. They will not tell you where they got them. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I have an idea of where the morels pop up here, and I did not find many this year. It did just rain a lot, so I might head out again, but it's getting a little bit late for us.
Hold on.
But it was really dry.
Hold on. It rained a lot? I'm super jealous.
Yeah, we got a good dousing earlier this week.
It was promised, and we got a little bit. Like, the road was wet when I came in to work yesterday, and a little bit of misting, but that was it. So we're hoping for more. We may have some showers coming up this week, but, you know, all of the weather.
Everyone's sake, yeah. I really hope you do.
Yeah. Wildfires are out there. Our newsroom's been covering them. If you haven't caught that coverage, you'll want to check it out at kexe.org. But I alerted you to the fun guy we were going to be talking to this week, and I knew that you would love this interview. Was I right?
You were so right. It was amazing.
This is a mycologist. That's someone who studies fungi. And he is a fun guy, is what he said. And it was very lively and had a lot to say. And of course, you have a particular interest in what he was talking about. Do you want to just say the words? I know you love them.
Wait, which words?
Cubicle butt rot.
Oh, of course. Cubicle butt rot.
We should take a listen to this mycologist, Jonathan Schilling.
How does a wood decaying fungi find a tree that's dying?
Well, a lot of times they're already there. So if you're testing the tree that it's, you know, in the yard, if you were to take a drill bit and drill a hole in there and extract DNA from the sawdust that you get out, even if the tree is perfectly healthy, you'll find a few of these saprotrophic fungi that live sort of with some stress, just kind of waiting around for that opportunity when things start going awry for the tree. So when trees blow down, like they did a lot of that last year here in the Bemidji region and around Itasca, those fungi in the trees kind of have a head start on starting that process. And what they want is the structural carbohydrates that are in the wood. So the trees, when they're growing, put down a tissue called secondary xylem. That's what we use for lumber. That is about 70% carbohydrates that are in what's called a polymer. So it's a complex linkage of sugars. So if these fungi can get those sugars and break those linkages, they have some pretty easy to metabolize sugar. And there's another component in there called lignin. And lignin is sort of the glue that sticks it all together. And these fungi that are in there typically want to get that either out of the way, or they may degrade it directly so that they can get access to those sugars. So that's what they're there for. That's how they operate.
How does that happen? How does a fungi go ahead and break down the lignin?
First, they're gutless. I like to say they're gutless. So everything they do has to be something they've secreted. So they secrete things. It oozes out of the little hyphae. So there are these little threads that permeate through the wood. And then they secrete what would be for us in our gut, like a gut enzyme suite. And so they secrete that out there. And then those are full of enzymes that are good at breaking those linkages. They have to get in close proximity and hope those things diffuse back to them. So it's a little risky, but they're gutless.
This is so fascinating. Now, so they start breaking down the lignin. What are we going to see? Like, I've got a big old white pine in my yard, and this wind from the last couple of days sheared off a branch that's big around as I am, probably is 12 or 14 inches in diameter, this branch that came down, a major part of the tree. What's going to happen there?
Well, it's funny that if you go inspect it, the spot where it broke is probably already decaying.
Yes.
And more than likely, given that it's a pine, I'm sure I would know the fungus if we could see it. More than likely, it is one of the types of fungi that has the mechanism that doesn't degrade much of the lignin and instead has figured out how to selectively extract the carbohydrates. And the way they do that is with something called an oxidative radical. And it's kind of like they've thrown a piece of dynamite into the wood around the fungus to break it all up. And then they will kind of absorb the bits afterwards. And what happens is that reduces the strength in the wood. So a lot of times in a white pine like that, you might get one of the fungi that causes this what's called brown rot. So that is when it leaves that lignin behind for the most part and selectively extracts out the carbohydrates and you lose strength in the tree. The brown rot mechanism.
I was out with some students the other day, and one of them kicked apart this log that was laying on the ground, looked like pine on the outside. Inside, the wood was reddish brown, and there was a white, I suppose, a fungi. I don't know. I mean, it was in there. And of course, the kids are, "What is this?" And I'm like, "It's probably fungi, but I don't
That's
know."
it. That's 100%. Yeah, the white stuff is probably the fungus itself, and it's doing so well that it's clumped up, that it has a mat. Sometimes they'll peel off in little mats in there, and that's called the mycelium. It is a single individual fungus, and it has all of these little threads. And the threads can either be sort of out there, like loose threads, or they can be congregated together. That's how they make the mushrooms. And those little mats are almost like a little lightweight leather material or something. So they can clump together. And then the brown part, you probably did see a brown rot in the conifer wood. And that's going to be a lot of leftover lignin. And most of those, the sugars will be gone from it. And sometimes you get a little pattern too that's called cubicle checking. And
I
it's one of
have.
those things you can describe. And someone might think it's complicated. And then when you see it, you're like, "Oh, I've seen that a million times." That's
Yes.
how, when a deck rots, oh, that's what that is. That's brown rot. So,
Brown rot, cubicle checking. I have
cubicle
seen it.
checking.
I came across this log one day that had been opened. Honest to God, I thought, if I got in close enough with my camera and photographed this, it could look like an escarpment of fractured rock. It was just little cubes, but stacked up at a certain scale, it would have looked like a giant rock wall of little cubes of structure. But of course, it was
I could
just a
see that.
rotting log.
I could see that.
Oh, I remember the day that I was introduced to brown cubicle butt rot. I was like on this walk with this phenomenal naturalist, Joe Waluski, and the second the words brown cubicle butt rot came out of his mouth, I had to step away for a minute or two because I just could not deal. It sounds like something like a doctor would diagnose you with if you've like been sitting at a 9-to-5 job in a cubicle for too long. You've got the butt rot.
Well, it's sort of like this is the work we do here on the Season Watch podcast. We try to keep you from cubicle butt rot
Right?
because we want you to go out. So we maybe
Yo,
need
get
to
out and find the cubicle butt rot in nature, not in yourself.
We're going to have to come up with a sticker with the circle and the cross of the no cubicle butt rot and have the picture of it there.
But it is true. Once you like start seeing it, you find it everywhere out there. It's a very distinctive like rot pattern. See it all the time now.
And
And the
if
mushrooms that form from that fungus are the Dyer's polypore. They can be used to like dye a whole bunch of different colors depending on how you prepare them.
Yeah, we heard from some people during the morning show, and actually Mary from Bemidji sent us a photo of yarn that was dyed with
Oh,
polypore.
amazing.
Yeah, this beautiful mustardy yellow color. The
Thanks,
full
nature.
interview of this is available at kaxe.org. That's Jonathan Schilling. He is a mycologist. He works out of Itasca State Park, where he and students are studying. And yeah, check it out, kaxe.org. Let us know what you have seen. Leave us a speak pipe, a voice message. It is a beautiful time to be outside in nature. It was pretty chilly yesterday. We still have a threat of frost, coming tomorrow here in northern Minnesota overnight, but you know, we're getting a little bit warmer, maybe up to 60 today, Charlie. So we're pretty excited.
Ho ho, look at you go. Mm. I think we're in high 50s, low 60s here. Okay. It's going to be 70s, maybe even like upper 70s on Sunday. Wow. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, I also wanted to talk about, we got some texts in during the Tuesday morning show here on KEXE. Ruth from Grand Rapids had a really good reminder for us. Watch out for turtles on the road and avoid them. I saw a smashed turtle on Wabana Road Saturday.
That hurts. Roads are the most dangerous thing to happen to turtles, probably in most of their evolutionary lifespan. They are not meant to have any natural predators or like really, once they reach an adult size, they should pretty much live for, you know, another 20 to 30, 40 years. And roads have really messed with their evolutionary plan. So yeah, if you can, help them across the road. Be safe.
Should we thank the folks that were included in this week's Season Watch pod?
Absolutely. Good old Jonathan Jongsma came through again for us with a scarlet tanager and the rose-breasted grosbeak call. We have North Shore Community School students to thank for their report. John Latimer, as always. And then Jonathan
Schilling.
Schilling.
Jonathan Schilling, as well as Mark Jacobs, who produced that segment. And we had a conversation afterwards, but we might need to have him back on to talk to him. So.
Oh, do we ever. Maybe on the podcast.
Hey, there we go. That could be a lot of fun.
Talk about cubicle butt rot all day.
There we go. Big thanks to you for listening, and please leave us a message. We love hearing voices and what you are seeing and how you too are curious and delighted by nature. Find a link to the SpeakPipe at the podcast platforms and at KEXE.org. Just look for Season Watch. It's sunny in the studio right now. I'm getting a little sleepy. Can you tell?
That's good.
All right. So I'm going to be lulled to nap time here then by the sounds, the melodious sounds of the rose-breasted grosbeak.
Which I just learned is also a type of cardinal.
There we go. Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you.
Support for Season Watch podcasts comes from Sugar Lake Lodge near Grand Rapids, a Northwoods setting on the shores of Sugar Lake, offering lodge rooms, cabins, and golf villas with on-site dining, a golf course, and access to the lake, trails, and seasonal outdoor recreation throughout the year. Plan your stay at sugarlakelodge.com.